Hello and welcome to Social Studies Voices Across America. I'm Bill Wood.
And I'm Peter Goldsmith.
We're continuing our look at, can we reassemble a broken America? We had one part to look at how America is broken and how it got broken. And now we're going to look a little bit more, a little bit further into what went wrong. We're not sure where this series is going to end, Peter, but it does give us an opportunity to look at what went wrong, and I don't think this is going to be the end of the series.
Yeah, I think you're right with that, Bill, but I think one of the things that's important for us to do as we have our second installment of this series is to be a little more specific in, you know, if we want to change something, how are we going to change it and with whom? So what I brought to the table today is I brought some statistics on who's voting and who's not voting, who is making the money, who is not making the money, because I think we all agree that to be a better country, a more fuller country, the one we really want, all of us, we need to be more inclusive than exclusive. And this may give us an idea of why we're not being inclusive in certain details, and certain we are.
We're working off of a common thing that what went wrong in America, like five things happened. We're going to pick five things out of the myriad of things that are out there. But let's say if we work on this common denominator, that in the 1960s, it was an age of enlightenment where everyone started to think about things, people, America in a different way. However you went down the road, you maybe crossed the road, or at least went down the middle of the road and thought about things a little differently, because more and more was coming into your consciousness. In the 1970s, there was political growth and power of the Christian right, and we're going to hear a little bit about that from a guy who was in charge of it. It was a speech that he made to some students at the Citadel, but he talked about how when everything went wrong, and the power of the Christian right. In the 1980s, TV was deregulated. There was a public discourse that TV generally looked at, we went from the America where everybody sat down and looked at Walter Cronkite at 6 o'clock in the evening to entertainment. And in the 80s, the Reagan administration deregulated TV, the Fairness Doctrine went away, and TV decides to use news programming as a profit center. Changed everything. In the 1990s, there was the rise of the far right, Fox News, Roger Ailes, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Alex Jones. And then in the 2000s, the late 90s and the 2000s, the internet told all of us that there's other people out there who think the same way that we do. Five things that we could look at and say, this is kind of what happened over the last half of the last century.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, Bill. And I think one of the things that we're going to find as a thread that runs all the way through this is the consciousness that says, if I am right, why should I listen to you? And once you adopt emotions, once you adopt a religious perspective, and I'm by no means, you know me, I'm a fairly religious human being, but once you adopt that idea of I am correct because I learned it in my holy book, be it the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Quran, whatever it is you want to use, therefore I don't have to listen to you. And I think that's been a great polarizing agent in the last second half of the 20th century and on into this 21st century. And one of the things that I think we're going to talk about is how do we, again, open our ears to listen, and perhaps we're not totally right about all things.
That's kind of what happened, and I didn't plan on going here, but that's kind of what happened in the 60s, where everybody got together and listen to each other for a change. Right. After the 50s and the suburban house and the white picket fence, everybody got together and for whatever reason decided to talk to each other. And that became an age of enlightenment that maybe we need to go back to that. You think?
Yeah, I do. And I'll tell you what I think happened. You know, after the Second World War and in the decade of the 1950s, probably beginning in 1948 or so and going all the way up to 1961, 62, we had a thing called the American Dream. And basically, it was an economic dream. It basically said, I want to have a car in every driveway, or two chickens in a pod, or two cars in the driveway, or one chicken in a pod, or one of those. It was a utopian dream, which, if it were true at any point, was certainly unsustainable by the economic growth that we had at that time. And once we got to the 60s and people started to open their eyes and say, hey, wait a minute. There is a small segment of the society living this utopian dream, but there's a larger percent that isn't living it. And we became inquisitive. Those most of us who are listening to this are children of the 60s. We became inquisitive. We started to question the government. It had never been done before. The Vietnamese War was a tremendous turning point in the history of this republic, because people said, wait a minute, not my country, right or wrong. Let me see what's right and what's wrong, and let me try to guide my country and myself to the right, to the correct. Now, whether that was pro or con with the war, it didn't matter. But people really took sides rather than accepting what the government had said. And that opened up a large chasm for the thinking person to say, hey, wait a minute. If this isn't correct, then maybe something else wasn't correct. And we began to question. And I think that questioning is healthy when put in the right way. And I think it's continued on to this day.
It's come to mind, and this might be a departure, but I don't think it is. We've lost the ability to imagine and to think and to be outside, and the necessary need of all of us to see before we can believe, or to read before we can understand. We've lost the ability to imagine. And I don't know when that happened. I think it was probably in the 90s when the internet began to take over. And again, people had to see YouTube, all the things that people had to understand. And we can't. It happens with children in particular that they can't imagine something other than what's right in front of them. And I think that's a problem. If we can't imagine another idea, another thought, that it's possible to think a different way about a thing, then we're going to be stuck in this mud, and we're not going to be able to get out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right, Bill. And I'll tell you something. As we get older, we've seen more and more, and nothing startles us anymore. With the total blanketing of our universe with media, nothing shocks us. You know, in the old days, we had the UFO people saying, yeah, there's UFOs, there's flying saucers and so forth. And the answer was, even if there were a flying saucer, the government wouldn't tell us about it because it would shock the population and who knows what would happen. Going back to the Orson Welles War of the Worlds, which I think was 1938 or something like that. However, is there anything in the world that would shock you so much that you'd pack your belongings in the back of your station wagon and drive up into the mountains and get lost? Hardly. Because we've seen it all. We really have. We understand the possibilities are extant here. You know, a funny story is, I have a dear friend who's an intelligent guy, and he absolutely has belief in UFOs and aliens and so forth and so on. And for the last few nights, and I'm admitting this publicly, I've actually been watching some of these TV shows about ancient aliens and so forth. Now, a year ago and beyond that, I would have said this stuff is a bunch of malarkey. Or as my sainted mother would say, it's bunk. But I'm watching and I'm saying, I don't think so, but it could be. You know, they've got these 50-ton slabs of marble which have been moved around and so forth and so on. Are they reverse engineered? I don't know. I don't think so, but who knows? And I think if we allow ourselves, just what you're saying, the possibility to imagine other things which we have accepted as truths, it's going to open us to a really great reconciliation with a lot of our, I don't know how to put it, opposite believers in our system here.
You know, there was a senator, I think it was from New York, Daniel Patrick Moynihan. You're a New Yorker. Yeah. Wasn't he a senator from New York for a while?
He was.
And he began remarking frequently during the 80s and 90s that people were entitled to their own opinions, but not to their own facts. And we've gotten to the point now, and, you know, comically, we could talk about alternative facts, but there are, you know, for the last 20 years or so, people have been measuring, using their own yardstick to measure their own path. And because until then, that it had not been necessary to say our marketplace of ideas became exponentially bigger and freer. It's true, but Thomas Jefferson said that he'd rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than those attending too small a degree of it. In other words, we need to use our liberty and the internet and all of this that's opened up to us to open our minds, not just to find more people who think like we do and be feel emboldened because we found people who think like us, so we must be right.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, that leads me to some of this this research I brought today. You know, we all talk about millennials, and quite frankly, the millennials are the generation that are taking over or in the process of taking over our government because of age. A millennial has been described as someone between 18 and 35. The millennials make up 31% of our country, which is the same as baby boomers. So the millennials are equal to what we are. Millennials are beginning now to exert their own thoughts and their own power in government. The problem is many of them don't vote because they don't believe it. Only 19% voted of those between the ages of 18 and 30, whereas baby boomers, or they're now calling us the silent generation, 71 plus, 38% of us voted. So twice as many voted.
After 1968, it's hard to imagine anybody calling us the silent generation.
I know. But anyway, that's what they're called. The ages 71 plus are known as the silent generation now. And we are voting at twice the numbers as the millennials are. They have the lowest voter turnout. So it's just interesting that instead of, you know, giving them something to cling to and believe in and giving them something that they can say, this works, this doesn't work, let's work to change it, they're kind of dropping out. And I think that's a big problem because those are the folks we need to get involved.
We need them more to get involved. That is going to be the future of the democracy. If the more that they don't participate, the more the democracy becomes mob rule and anyone can take it over and lead it in whatever direction we want to go. I mean, it's easy now for people to say that our current president was influenced by another world leader, and let's not go down that road. But to everyone who doesn't participate, we open the door for one idea to become the idea in America instead of America being a panoply of a lot of ideas, and we can't all get in one room and raise our hands, but we can go to the polls and vote every couple of years or every 4 years for president, and that's our way of having that national town hall.
You know, when we talked last time about this, one of the things that I think, as I said, we all agree on is we need inclusion. That's going to bring the various ideas to the post. And I think that we're not seeing it as much now as we have in the past. You know, for example, in 2016, the black vote was the smallest it's been. In 2016, the women's vote was larger, but not by much. We had, by the way, which is an interesting statistic, in 2016, we had 137.5 million American people voting. That came out to about 61%. In 2012, that number was 60. I'm sorry, in 2008, that number was 63.6%. So we have dropped off. And I think that the last election that we had in 2016 was the most disparate. I think the candidates were the farthest apart they've been for a long time. I think President Trump was further to the right, and certainly Bernie Sanders was extremely to the left. And even Mrs. Clinton, Secretary of State Clinton, was further left. So I think we're seeing that go on now. And it's interesting because President Trump had more millennials voting for him than did Mrs. Clinton.
And I said this at the time. I think that what President Trump was voicing what he represented was the same thing that, in a strange way, the same thing that President Obama presented at the time was change. And I think people were voting for change. They wanted change. But the change was very different than what a lot of them expected. I know back in the 80s, I think it was, I don't know, maybe 86 or maybe it was 90. It was the gubernatorial election here in California when Tom Bradley was running against George Dukmejian the first time. And I've never forgotten this. That night we were looking at all the exit polls said Bradley was going to win. In fact, there was a man named Mervyn Field who lost his business because he stayed where everybody else had said that Dukmejian had won. Field said that all of his exit polls stayed with Bradley. He stayed with Bradley until after 1 o'clock in the morning before he finally changed his mind. What mm-hmm. we found out eventually was that 19%, less than one in five eligible black voters, voted in the election, that Bradley got more than 90% of those people, but only less than one in five voted, and that Bradley would have won, become governor of California, the largest state in the union, like 10% of the population. Bradley would have won with less than two votes per precinct statewide. I mean, that's an incredible number to consider. And why is it important? Because there would have been a different candidate, a black candidate, governor of California. And if nothing else, he could have helped open the door for economic development by letting contracts to pour concrete at a new airport or to build a building or do whatever. It could have changed the economic development in many communities in the state of California. Two votes per precinct. I think that's an incredible number to think on at one time.
Absolutely it is, Bill. And, you know, we're finding the same thing today with, I looked up these statistics, women in office, okay, in public office. There are one, we have 20 out of 100 senators are women. 85 out of 435 in the House are women. Women make up 19.6% of Congress, and women are 50.8% of our population. So when you start to put those numbers in order, you realize that we're still dealing with a white patriarchy, which is not getting it done. And one of the things that we really have to consider is how do we bring people of color, women, into office? How do we back these people, be they Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever they happen to be? But how do we get these ideas in the public? You know, for years it was like, well, we can't have a woman president because whatever the excuses were. Well, today you and I know that there are at least 12 women around the world who are running their countries, Angela Merkel being one, and of course, Theresa May in Great Britain. But, you know, this is old thinking that we need to root out and get rid of. You know, we need to start opening ourselves up to the possibilities of what can happen if we make some changes. What can the results be if we allow ourselves to think differently, if we allow ourselves to listen to other people? It's phenomenal to me that we still harbor the same silliness that we had years and years ago, and we don't want to change it. Why we don't want to change it? Well, you know, we could go into that for forever and ever. Insecurity, power, money, we all know this stuff. But I think we have to talk in smaller terms than that. I think we really have to start believing that, you know, what's the old saying? The longest journey starts with one step. Well, we're starting to take these steps, but we need to start, instead of walking these steps, we need to start running these steps.
The depth of what's happening goes back to the 70s, more than 40 years. We mentioned before we got started, and I want to get this in here, that Ralph Reed, now he was the head of the Christian Coalition starting in 1989, but he talked about single-purpose voting. I can't think of the term that's used right now, but when we vote what we want instead of what we think might be best for the country, and we're voting based on one single idea. And this was something that Ralph Reed talked about. He was talking to the class at the Citadel in 2012, April of 2012, but he talked about what happened in 1970 when, in the 70s, in, was it 76, when Jimmy Carter was elected. He was elected as a born-again Christian, a self-professed born-again Christian, and he got the Christian vote, leaped on board behind him, leaped on his bandwagon, but that changed during the Carter administration when Carter was in the midst of governing. Let's hear how Ralph Reed explained that.
It didn't take long for them to be disappointed, and their disappointment reached a crescendo in 1978, when the Carter administration's Department of the Treasury proposed the promulgation of regulations that would have required Christian schools across the United States to demonstrate that they were not functioning as segregated academies seeking to sidestep court-ordered desegregation or risk losing their tax-exempt status. This was seen as such hostility towards Christian education in America. Under the administration of a man who said he was a born-again Christian, that evangelicals began to turn on Jimmy Carter in large numbers and desperately searched for a new political leader.
It wasn't the first time, but it was the first time that a large group of people, with the support of Pat Robertson and his 700 Club, and they all came together under one purpose, that they would rather have their feelings put into power, and we're going to take anybody out of power who goes against that. And I think that was the beginning of a real movement in the country to go in one direction. There are other people who vote their conscious vote, these single issue things, but the more we get splintered into these single issue things, the more America breaks apart. And the idea of what we're talking about here in these podcasts is, how do we reassemble America?
We need to start listening to other voices. You know, all day long, you can talk to your best friend who votes the way you do, and you can complain about the other party and so forth and so on. And then my friend who's on the opposite side can complain about your party and so forth and so on. Doesn't get anywhere. What gets anywhere is building a constructive environment where people can air differences, where people can listen, where people can realize there are more things to be known than I know right now. And there are many ways to fix these things. And we've got to, again, talk about minorities and women. And we've got to talk about the overriding umbrella to all this stuff, and that is economics. That's not something we want to start right now. I know we're going to wrap up pretty in a few minutes pretty soon. But I think that perhaps if we can do one more of these episodes and just speak about the economics of what goes on, Even today, I have some more statistics. I know you're surprised because I don't usually have a lot of statistics. but I looked something up, and it's the pay gap between men and women. Okay. In the state of Louisiana in 2012, women were making 70% of what men were making. In my old state, where I come from, New York, no longer live there, but it's where I grew up, it's the best in the country. It's 87%. But even so, we're looking at disparate things. So even though we're saying women are equal, men are equal, so forth and so on, we're saying they're not. They're doing the same work and making less money. How can you justify that? Well, you need to rethink these things. Oh, well, women have responsibilities and family. Well, they don't. You know, the old nuclear family has broken down for a long, long time. Many women in this country are the primary breadwinners. We need to relook at these things. We need to examine these things. And we need to admit to ourselves we're barking up the wrong tree here. There are new ideas and new things. Again, I don't want to start it. Maybe we can do one more of these podcasts just on that and be more specific. But I think where we've come to today is take a look at who's voting and who's not voting and why. Take a look at how we're not listening, how we're not realizing that other people, even though they may differ from us on certain issues, can agree on certain other issues. How do we have to form coalitions around correct issues? I saw a commercial the other day on television. I think maybe it was a Super Bowl. And it was saying how great our country is, how many good things we do, and which is, of course, true. We know we live in the greatest country in the world. But it was saying how many people came together to help the people who were hit by the hurricanes and the floods. Nobody said, are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? Are you a socialist? Are you a Tea Party guy? Nobody said that. Everybody said, hey, these folks need help. We need to start bringing help to these people. I can volunteer. I can donate money. I can be boots on the ground. Well, that was a nice example of how we transcend this stuff, and I think we need more of those.
But we also need to come to grips with something that First Amendment allows us to have our own opinion and to speak our own opinion, but it doesn't give us the right to present our own facts of an issue and stand on those facts and, in effect, vote on those facts. For someone to come into the office of presidency and say that the world's worse off than it's ever been or the country is worse off than it's ever been, that's just not true, that there are fewer people in poverty than ever before. And if more people have access to information than ever before, that's because of the internet. Now, the other side of the internet is what we've talked about before, is that we find ways to support disparate beliefs, but it also opens the door for people to learn, and that we're kind of at that point where we do need to have another age of enlightenment. That's kind of what you're talking about, that we need to learn more and more things. We are at a place where we can stop now, and we are going to look at this thing one more time. We've talked about what went wrong. We originally said America was broken, and with this edition of the podcast, we've looked at what went wrong, and we talked about the age of enlightenment of the 60s, where we began to open our minds to new things, the political growth and power of the Christian right, and more political power, but let's say the Christian right, single voting concept, single issue voting. TV was deregulated. The Fairness Doctrine was taken away. Suddenly, TV decides to use news programming as a profit center. The public discourse, where everybody came together and there was one common set of facts, that went away. There was the rise of the separation, you can say, the far right, Fox News, and Alex Jones, who talks about political candidate is supposed to be sponsoring a pedophile ring in a pizza parlor somewhere. This insanity gets around to everybody believing that because of the internet that's grown in the late 90s and 2000s until now. So that's kind of where we are, what went wrong, and what we have to do now, and we'll do that in our next podcast, is to look at How do we solve some of these problems? And besides just the common thing of vote, but let's look at how we can solve some of these problems going forward.
Thanks, Bill. That's a good way to end it. I appreciate that. And you and I shall speak again in 2 weeks.
For Peter Goldsmith, I'm Bill Wood. This is Social Studies Voices Across America. As we go forward, let's take care of each other, respect each other, and look forward to the next time. Peace.